Hi, you're the Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal. Today, we'd like to speak with you about a paper coming out in the July 2016 issue of Medical Education, the title of which is Value of Supervised Learning Events in Predicting Doctors in Difficulty. And I'll be speaking with the first author of that work, who is Mumtaz Patel, who is a consultant renal medicine physician at Central Manchester University Hospitals in the UK, and also postgraduate associate dean, although it sounds like that latter position is a more recent phenomenon. Is that fair to say?
That's right, yes. I started that position in January of this year.
Oh, and still able to find the time to have a conversation like this.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, well, congratulations on your new role, and it sounds like you are well on your way to incorporating some interesting innovations and improvements to postgraduate training, if this paper is any indication. I'll start, I think, by asking you if you wouldn't mind just telling our listeners around the globe what a supervised learning event is.
Okay, so a supervised learning event is one of the newer workplace-based assessments tools which was introduced in the United Kingdom, particularly for foundation or the newly qualified trainees back in 2012. It emulates the same kind of premise and basis of a workplace-based assessment, but as you know, there's been some criticism of workplace-based assessments over the years that although theoretically they're best placed to assess individuals' actual performance, and despite their many advantages around their overall validity, there were some issues around reliability and acceptability, and particularly its time-consuming nature. So our joint Royal College of Physicians training boards introduced these supervised learning events, which replace the more traditional workplace-based assessments in 2012. And the key element of the supervised learning events were kind of to provide more of a narrative, more of a qualitative feedback from the trainees in such a way that the feedback would become a tool in itself to drive learning, reduce the overall number of assessments, which has always been kind of a criticism of the workplace-based assessments, that it becomes more of a tick-box exercise, and to enhance a sort of a reflection and feedback which drives learning. The main difference from the original workplace-based assessments was the original workplace-based assessment had more of a quantitative scoring system, so numbers again, which made people use it as, you know, kind of just putting the numbers down and not giving actual substantial feedback to the trainees. So the idea of the supervised learning events was that it would be a supervised learning event in itself rather than something which was done retrospectively, so more of a real-time event with direct targeted feedback at the time and giving trainees some time to reflect and then enhance the process of learning. So that in a nutshell is what it is. I guess in foundation training, and now it's been rolled out into all of our training pathways from foundation to core medical to specialty training. And trainees would be encouraged to do these in a contemporary way throughout the year, and then on an annual assessment review. It's a formative type of assessment, but it would be a tool to assess progress of individual trainees through the training year. And one of the premises of the supervised learning events was that it would enhance or help with identifying with trainees who are running into difficulty at an early stage. So that's in a nutshell of what it is and how it's currently being used.
Right. I appreciate the nutshell version of things and don't want to push you too far beyond that given the limited time we have, but can you give me a bit more detail in terms of how these things are actually implemented? I'm sure not everybody does it exactly the same way, but is the idea that a supervisor and a learner collaboratively select a particular patient encounter to have a discussion around, or does it happen retrospectively, or how do these things actually tend to play out in practice?
Yeah, so there's different supervised learning events, and the tools that the supervised learning events are some of the established tools. So the mini clinical evaluation exercise, the mini KECs, the case-based discussions, the DOPS or the direct observation and procedural skills. So those original workplace-based assessment tools are being used within the supervised learning events as such. So they are conducted in a manner where it gives an opportunity for the trainee and trainer to meet. There's some discussion around some of the cases either beforehand, as in, you know, discussion on a ward round to say, oh, this would be an interesting case for discussion after the ward round, and, you know, then the trainee and trainer could have an opportunity to have a discussion around the case. So that would be the mini clinical evaluation exercise. The case-based discussion sometimes is more of then giving the trainee some opportunity to read around the topic or the case in particular, and then having a discussion after the event has occurred. So that may be, you know, kind of later in the day or a few days later. But, you know, a face-to-face discussion. So some are more sort of direct at the same time, and some maybe a few days later. But the idea is that there is some discussion around the case between the trainee and the trainer as to what case is being discussed, and then discussion thereafter. Each of the actual events may take from, the encouragement is at least 10 to 15 minutes, maybe shorter, a little bit longer, but at least provide an opportunity of learning during that kind of process. As in addition to the case-based kind of supervised learning events, one of the other sort of important ones to mention is kind of the team assessment of behavior, or kind of like a multi-source feedback. So that would be a little bit of a separate way, and I guess the assessment is more around more generic kind of clinical skills as well as more interprofessional communication skills. And those kind of assessments would be done by an agreement between the education supervisor and the trainee as to the people that would be asked potentially to comment on that trainee's behavior, skills and knowledge. And then those would get sent out as an email, and then the respondents would respond. The feedback would be collated, would be shared initially with the supervisor, who would then release it to the trainee, and that would be more anonymized group feedback. But the rest of the ones that we talk about in the paper, and I guess there's six sort of major types, those kind of ones are more direct interactions between trainer and trainee.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it sounds to me like this then is very deliberately aimed at being an assessment for learning sort of activity, and sounds like you're normalizing the process so that all physicians in training should be able to take away some benefit in terms of their own performance improvement. It's another ball of wax entirely to identify whether or not you can pick out those people at the bottom end and use it as an assessment of learning and identification of what you've labeled as doctors in difficulty. What was it about the experience over the first few years that you've been using these things that led you to believe this might be fit for that purpose as well?
Yes, yeah. So I guess, you know, my experience with trainees in difficulty in my various educational roles over the last few years led me to develop a greater interest in evaluating doctors in difficulty as such, particularly in the sense of, you know, as an education supervisor and then later training program director and college tutor, you come across a number of trainees in difficulty. And when you look back, sometimes you do feel as though some of these issues could have been picked up earlier. It's always easy in retrospect, I appreciate that, but certainly looking at the electronic portfolios as they are, one of the things I was encountering was the recording of information on workplace-based assessments as well as supervisor reports or just any documentation could be better and was far from detailed. And that was an experience which was shared between other senior educationalists as well as trainers. And then we were thinking, well, you know, okay, the workplace-based assessments per se are there to pick up or assess performance in the actual workplace. We've had all these criticisms over the years of some of the sort of difficulties around workplace-based assessments. These newer supervised learning events have been brought in to evaluate things differently and maybe pick up these trainees earlier, but is it actually achieving its goal? And I guess that's where my question was, that that hadn't been looked at specifically. And although, you know, I went in a bit of a sceptical way saying that I don't think the older workplace-based assessments were picking things early, are the newer ones any better? That was one of the premises for some of the changes that happened. So that drove the initial question, I guess, and the motivation towards actually doing the study.
Well, and again, without going too far into the details of the methodology, you ran a case control procedure, and that obviously requires the identification of cases, doctors who are in difficulty. Can you tell our listeners a bit about how that identification was made so that you could establish the two groups that you were comparing?
Yeah, so we have a process at our local Health Education England kind of board, which is within the Northwest Foundation School, and it's a definition that has been used in our previous studies within the group. So it's basically any trainee who's caused concern to their educational supervisor about the ability of carrying sort of their specific duties. So, you know, I guess it's unusual measures in the sense of the trainee concerns whether they're on a clinical basis, on a performance, behavioural, you know, health ground, that the trainer has felt that it's needed escalating upwards to what we call our local educational providers. So that's kind of a defined process and the definition that we in particular used. And the foundation, the electronic portfolio databases that we use, had the index cases were those trainees that were identified. Obviously, the analysis of the data was done on anonymized cases, so I, as the researcher, didn't know which trainees had already been identified and which hadn't been. But that's the kind of overall definition that we'd used, like I say, sort of the previous few papers that our group has sort of looked at foundation trainees, we've used that set kind of definition.
And we spend so much time thinking about how to identify and how to help those physicians or trainees who are struggling that it can be easy to lose sight of the fact that they're fortunately relatively uncommon. The prevalence in your sample was 6.5%, if I'm reading that correctly, and that makes for quite a challenging identification task in that you're in some ways looking for a needle in a haystack, but obviously these needles stand out in many ways when they are seen, but in terms of identifying predictors that will lead us there, it can be a bit more challenging. You seem to have had some success, though, with the supervised learning events, and maybe you can share some of the highlights of your results with our listeners.
Yes, no, very much so. So it is very much a needle in the haystack. You're very correct there. And certainly looking at the number of assessments that we had to go through whilst doing the study, I mean, I think we started off with over 50,000 assessments which were completed, because when you go through the different supervised learning events, there's a number of them that the trainees do through the training year and a number of different ones they do. And I guess what we were trying to establish was, as an individual supervised learning event, the different ones, whether they predict. So the question is, how do we do that? So because there's free text qualitative feedback, we had to do that in a slightly different way of analysis, because previous studies have just used the mean scores that we talked about of the original workplace-based assessments, whereas this is more free qualitative sort of feedback. So the free text feedback was assessed more qualitatively, so reading, rereading lots and lots of supervised learning events, and then trying to use a kind of a coding system so that you can do a qualitative thematic analysis. But then when you're looking at thousands of assessments, I guess, you know, the validity of that method of assessment would probably not be as great. So we had to use kind of the narratives to then develop a quantitative way of analysing the data. And we coded the pretext data using the GMC, or the General Medical Council Good Medical Practice Domains. We then used the regression analysis using our difficulty status as our dependent variable, and using the single covariate, which was the cumulative scores of the GMC domains that I've just alluded to. And I guess the main findings, which were interesting, were that the TAB, or the Team Assessment of Behaviour, which is kind of like I guess people, you know, around the globe will probably know this as more multi-source feedback. It's a similar kind of way of assessing more of the wider trainee attributes, so knowledge, skills and behaviour, communication, interpersonal team working skills. So that in particular we found was very strongly predictive of trainees in difficulty. The education supervisor report, as we know, contains a lot of cumulative information of a lot of the trainees' progress. And I think when well written, again, we found was very strongly predictive of doctors in difficulty. And then one of the weaker predictors was the mini-CEX, the mini clinical evaluation exercise, which was more weakly predictive. But when we looked at the subgroups, again, it was the same, with the team assessment behaviour education supervisor report being very strongly associated. But within the subcategories, again, the mini-CEX we found was weakly predictive of performance as well. So the main take-home messages, or the important ones to focus on, were the team assessment of behaviour and the supervisor report, as you would expect, and then the mini-clinical evaluation exercise, which was more weakly predictive. But the other interesting thing when we did the more qualitative thematic analysis overall, comparing and looking for themes of how the trainees in difficulty and the non-trainees in difficulty differed, and the themes that were coming up were that there was a lot of underreporting of concerns. So even when concerns were sort of highlighted or ticked as a concern, then the free text wasn't that helpful and wasn't as detailed as you would hope. And feedback per se, the whole premise of the supervised learning events was on the basis of providing good detailed feedback so that the trainee could then reflect upon it, learn upon it, and kind of progress in a more positive manner. But certainly we did find that the completion of the feedback boxes were fairly poor in even the good trainees. So, you know, differentiating good versus bad became difficult when evaluating this. So one of our other sort of messages from the study was that there is lots of potential for the supervised learning events to predict, help evaluate trainees in difficulty and used as an assessment tool. But I think the potential is there and we could do it better in the sense of trying to improve the feedback as well as just using the tool more in a constructive way. So that was, you know, overall what we found.
Well, and that leads me nicely to what will be my last question, which is to ask you to think about your new role as postgraduate associate dean and others who are in similar roles. And whenever the topic of using narrative forms of feedback comes up, feasibility gets reflexively raised as an issue. And with these data that you have, can you give us your thoughts on how you intend to use these SLE processes, what modifications you're thinking about testing out, and any advice that you might have for others who were convinced that this might be something worth exploring?
Yeah, so I guess the what next question would be, we feel the supervised learning events have great potential. Certainly the TAB, the team assessment of behaviour, you know, is very strongly predictive, and we would encourage greater use of that in evaluating and assessing trainees in difficulty. And we've found that even if there's low-level concern on those, we've shown that in some of our subsequent work that using the tool to identify and then putting in structured objectives for the trainee and then repeating the team assessment behaviour, you can show progression and improvement of trainees who are in difficulty. And one of the big issues around supervised learning events or any assessment tool is quality. I mean, I think the tools are there, but I feel they can be used better. And what I'm doing at the moment and the big piece of work that we're driving forwards is improving quality of both the supervisor reports as well as the supervised learning events. And how would you do that? I guess what we would need to feed back to both trainers and trainees is the importance of the tools, the way you can use it, and then improving the quality thereafter. And some small pieces of work that we've done, which we are hoping to publish, have shown that just targeted individualized feedback, we've developed a standardized way of assessing the supervisor reports and also the supervised learning events, giving specific scores to individual supervisors, assessing it on the basis of comments that have been made by the trainers when they're doing the supervised learning events and the supervisor reports on progression as well as development, feedback, reflective process, and then giving qualitative feedback targeted, individualized to the supervisor, and also gaining feedback from the trainee. And on subsequent reports thereafter, we've shown that there's a significant improvement in quality. So just with targeted feedback and more individualized towards trainers, and just knowing what you're being assessed upon, you know, quality-wise, both for the supervisor reports as well as the supervised learning events, that in itself can improve and drive quality. So I guess that the next bit that I'm trying to develop and improve is, yes, the tool is there. Yes, we can use it better. And driving the quality to improve it is one of the first things. And secondly, would be improving both the engagement from the trainee and the trainer in doing these better too, because the second piece of this particular study was structured interviews with educators that we did to evaluate their perceptions of how we're using these tools. And what was coming out still was a lot of negative perception around both the older and the newer workplace-based assessments as to what difference is it. You know, it's a tick box exercise. We don't get much out of it. We don't have time to do it, all this kind of thing. And it's trying to change the negatives to positives by improving trainees and trainers' kind of knowledge around it, the importance around it, how we can drive learning and improve the acceptance overall. So I guess that's the next pieces of work that we're driving forward. So my message would be that these are good tools. There are specific ones which are better for evaluating trainees in difficulty. And yes, there's room to improve the quality of these assessment tools that we can hopefully improve their usage and identify and help trainees to improve their sort of progression.
Right. So some very interesting ideas and promising leads there, and I will look forward to seeing how it evolves. Before we sign off, I'll remind our listeners that I've been speaking with Mumtaz Patel, who's at Central Manchester University Hospitals, about a paper that she and her co-authors have coming out in the July 2016 issue of Medical Education called The Value of the Supervised Learning Events in Predicting Doctors in Difficulty. As always, we're only able to scratch the surface during these brief conversations, but hopefully they give you enough of an appetite whetting that you'll seek out some more information. Thank you, Mumtaz, for making the time. I greatly appreciate the insights that you shared and wish you the best of luck in your new role.
Oh, thank you very much. My pleasure. And thank you for giving me the opportunity for sharing my work.